right, so I'll go ahead and get started. I'm Orrin Mechanic. I'm a physician, as well as, similar to Adam, an administrator. Ran telehealth for quite some time in a large medical center. Transitioned over in the past, actually, couple weeks to a new venture. Glad to be here. I'm actually Miami-based now. Moved down from Boston just 2 years ago. So glad to have made the way across the bridge from Miami Beach.
Yeah, and I'm Beiju. I'm actually from Charleston, South Carolina. Wish I was from Miami now that Orrin's mentioning it. Lovely city. Thank you for listening to what we have to talk about, and also learning from everyone that has spoken in today's sessions. So I'm a pharmacist by profession. I actually worked at a large academic medical center for the last decade. And the answer to Adam's earlier question is 42. I joke. I actually worked in informatics for most of my time, optimizing these EHRs and trying to train these systems to be better predictors of how clinical decisions should be developed using evidence-based practices, allowing clinicians to practice at the top of their license. So I'm not new to the healthcare tech space, but I wouldn't say I am also new to telehealth insofar as I've just recently joined DoxyMe for the last 6 months, working to develop their programs and also trying to integrate the system platform into the EHRs that we have today. So since COVID, I just wanted to say since COVID we've had a lot of adoption for telehealth, but now we're moving to a different state, which is a different level of maturity. And so that's my role today, is how do we integrate our telehealth platforms in these systems that we have. But
Great. And FX Campion, I'm a general internist part of the week and a researcher the rest of the week. But I think my medical group's journey was pretty typical of a lot of physicians across the country. Up to the pandemic, I'm in an 800 physician practice. We're well developed on our large EHR and have done pretty much everything you can do in clinical decision support and population health. So we were ripe for telehealth. But we, at the time of leading up to the pandemic, really only had one pilot program in pediatric telehealth and one pilot program in behavioral health. So we hadn't gotten into the major cohort of primary care medicine, of which I'm a member of the staff. And so we had the crash course in that first 2 weeks, like many of you may have had. And we learned, as we're going, and I'm actually, in retrospect, glad that we didn't take 10 years to do it from the time we started a pilot in internal medicine, because I don't know if we would have ever gotten there. But some of the things, really basic things that we've learned is that our physicians typically need to have more than one platform. So even though we're using a large EHR's built-in system with the patient portal, it sometimes isn't the right fit at the moment. And you don't know until you're actually trying to reach out to that patient or they're having a difficult time navigating. So we've always made sure every physician has two or three potential ways to get to the patient in addition to the plain old telephone. And we're pretty nimble about that. We do document that as we go along. We try to have physicians avoid using their own personal cell phones. And early in the pandemic, that was actually one of the defaults that we quickly had to move away from. And there's a few good ways of doing that, like moving with DoxyMe or Doximity or something similar. Another important aspect is trying to make sure the patient has an experience that's appropriate, and creating a sense of privacy is key to that. And so basic things like closing your door, making sure if you have a medical student in your room or a resident that's under training with you, that the person knows there's another person in the room. So if they all of a sudden hear someone coughing kind of off screen, they know that it's an appropriate collaboration going on there.
Yeah, FX, and I wanted to ask you about that a little bit. I feel like, as I was getting my training in pharmacy school and working with medical students at the time, we never really had any training with any of this stuff. And I suspect that maybe, Orrin, feel free to jump in, but I feel like this is something that's still repeated. We don't you know, a lot of this is, by the way, low tech, right? You don't have to have a virtual background. You can actually put a screen behind you to kind of cover your room as a provider. But are these things being talked about in the schools and in the curriculum, you know, or how much of it is?
That's a great question. We actually had to formalize training pretty quickly. So this was March, and next thing you know, you have a whole GME class. So at our institution, it's probably a couple hundred interns coming in. And so I was, you know, standing up there presenting to everyone, and we're all masked up how to do a telehealth visit, right? Because they've never been trained. And then you have the medical school where all of your OSCEs, the observed standardized clinical assessments, have to be done over Zoom. And, you know, we've never done that before. We've never assessed medical students over Zoom. So really, it's hard to show empathy over Zoom, right? So all of that had to be trained up pretty quickly. And we were learning as we were, you know, moving forward. So that's how we did. And I'm sure you had a...
right. I think we created videos for physicians to watch. We had, because we couldn't even get together. The medical staff was, we weren't having our weekly meetings. And so just even doing the training was a considerable challenge.
Where are these huddles taking place now? I wonder. So,
well, now we're everything's hybrid. So many of our physicians will have a couple of telehealth visits at the beginning or end of a session, and then they're face to face in the middle. We have some that have chosen a schedule where they're telehealth, you know, 2 days a week, and face to face the other couple days a week. So there's been a lot of things worked out, and I think, you know, we're probably much better off and more resilient now to meet patients' needs. I think a lot of our physicians too like the evolution. If you have other obligations that come up in your own home, or if you get ill, you can actually still, to a great degree, carry on business if you're home. So I think it's been a great learning experience, but we realize that there's still, you know, need to optimize the experience for patients. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that are really basic is when a patient doesn't connect initially, we go to a great extent to chase that patient down, to call them a couple of times, to try their other phone line, to switch your own device in case it's not, in case it's your device connectivity. And so we found that in some cases, patients find the telehealth visit to be easier to no-show to, so it takes a little bit extra effort.
Yeah, and we try to really think about access, and that we have two different models here. You are an Epic shop, right, that has the telehealth built in. We are a homegrown shop where we had to create something really quickly. So I think that there's this kind of juxtaposition of two different systems and seeing how, you know, we're both successful at the end. We incorporated a lot of, you know, patients, their families, interpreter services to say, hey, how the heck do you want to do this, right? We are obligated to do video visits, telephone visits. What will that look like to you, to us? And I think that that actually, you know, benefited us in the long run, but in the short run, it was really tough for us to implement telehealth. We ended up actually using patient navigators, and patient navigators for us were helpful to actually onboard the patient to the telehealth platform, reduce the no-shows and the cancellations and all that. But, you know, there's a real ROI to consider. And you know, it was just something to take. We didn't want our doctor spending a lot of time on the phone with the patient, and so that was one way that we addressed it.
Right, and I think that's a really important point. I just want to add on to, you know, you have to have these touch points that are significant for both the provider and for the patient. And, you know, I'm sure many of you guys have been in a clinic, at least in a brick and mortar or virtual. And, you know, I'm sure you've had similar experiences where, you know, last few weeks ago, we were talking about this earlier, went through a urgent care clinic experience, and then I went online and did the same for a cough. And it's, you know, one of these most basic things you think about where it's like, I am trusting my provider to give me the best care possible, but through either modality, I have to make sure that relationship is built on trust. And, you know, that's essentially what I think practice of medicine and any practice as a clinician has come to is like that patient-provider relationship. How do you amplify it? How do you, develop it so the patient trusts the encounter and the provider can build on that? And so going through this journey, just for a simple cough, I will say the experience on both ends, brick and mortar and virtual, was pretty horrible, to say at least. I got some meds. I left home and I got treated and it worked out. But going back to this question of ease of access, I think for me and maybe some others, there's been demonstrated efforts that this virtual platform and the brick and mortar as a hybrid can maybe enable patient care a little bit more effectively. Maybe it's medication adherence. We've had use cases where opioid use disorder, I think, has been come about where telehealth has really helped provide adherence and compliance of, medications for these patients. Maybe not creating net new patients, but at least certainly creating adherence or better adherence of these medications. So what are your thoughts around that?
Well, I would say that definitely from a primary care perspective, helping to manage patients with mental health and behavioral health disorders, particularly with med management, is really changed a lot with telehealth. So if we start a new antidepressant med, we're supposed to follow up within 30 days. That's kind of our expected standard. And it's much easier to do with telehealth to connect with that patient and do a dose adjustment at 3 weeks, 4 weeks, than to try to get them scheduled for a face-to-face, because the face-to-face times were hard to keep getting scheduled. Or I can see the patient instead of having to have my PA see the patient for that adjustment. And I think that helps to maintain a little bit better continuity. Mm. Same thing with a lot of derm appointments. So I recently had a patient he's an adult, but he has a mental limited capacity because of his cerebral palsy. But he had a terrible cat bite injury on his hands and came in with infections and had to start him on antibiotics, but needed to have a lot of observation of his wounds over short intervals. And three telehealth visits after that helped us to achieve a good outcome, but it was a little touch and go whether we were going to have to bring him into the hospital at one point. So I think telehealth can really help with continuity.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see change or maintain in the system? You're in Massachusetts right now. Massachusetts reimburses for telehealth, but some states may not, and Massachusetts may not soon. Medicare is considering some changes. So what are your all thoughts on that, especially as you're able to see a patient three times after an in-person visit? Medicare may say, hey, that's not a telehealth visit. That's just a follow-up in kind. Curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I can maybe kick us off there. Like, basically, I was talking to a pharmacist, actually, who is working under a collaborative drug therapy agreement with a physician practice. And, one of the things he was saying was, and he's funny, he's based in Massachusetts, but one of the things he was saying was that he prefers having the virtual visit so he can see the environment, the patient's keeping his, their medications in, what other medications or supplements is the patient using. More often than not, if the patient comes in, they may not be bringing those products into the office. And so you get to get this like sneak preview of the patient and maybe learn a little bit more additional context over how you're going to be treating them with all the information rather than, maybe some information. So I think that was an important piece. I kind of got from the fact that, if reimbursement is being taken away and these sort of virtual visits are being taken away, what other context is being taken away as part of that? So, I think there's going to be probably more to say about that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, FX.
Yeah, I think there's just so much evolution that's already occurred, but if you're ready, there's going to be a lot more. When I think about these virtual first health plans that are now being birthed, we know that many young patients in particular are going to choose these plans, and their obligation for a little lower deductible on their in copays is that they have their first encounter for their cough even for preventive services with a virtual provider. And that virtual provider will likely be in some kind of nationalized telehealth organization, likely not a local brick-and-mortar clinician. And so these handoffs, even within the primary care enterprise, are going to be one that we're going to need to think long and hard about, particularly if the telehealth platforms between that entity and my organization are different, because we would like to have a smooth patient experience. We'd like to have the EHR data to be common across, but there's going to need to be a lot of work around those types of collaborations.
Yeah, I actually like the fact that you said work. Going back to Adam's point on creating ways where we can make it seamless for the clinician, but also build it into their workflows is important. Quick question for both of you guys. There's an article recently that came about that talked about AI and use of AI in terms of clinical decision support for some of these telehealth solutions. And I believe there's actually AI chat bot, a virtual bot that just sort of was announced, and you can actually go online and interact with. I think it's Francesca. I think that's the name. And so just thinking about how can we maybe use these tools as adjunct to your workflow, so that let's say you want to collect medication history for a patient and review it. Well. Now you save maybe 15 minutes out of your workflow to do that by capturing it in the intake process. What are your thoughts on?
So there's a lot out there, first of all. There's patient-facing, clinician-facing.
Right.
I'll tackle the physician-facing. And we keep going back to what Adam said, actually, because what he said meant a lot. We need to make the experience in the hospital a lot better. I'm an emergency doctor. I use an EHR, and about 7 different things pop up about should I consider a sepsis bundle, heart score for chest pain. I mean, there are just so many things that pop up. I end up either clicking all of them okay, just to move along. The patient is sick. I need to take care of the patient. Sometimes I click out of it. But now you're talking about cost of care just increasing because I clicked on 3 different bundles and God knows what's in that, right? Or I'm clicking out of things that could have really just helped me out, like, and maybe I could have calculated a heart score to risk stratify the patient and see, whether or not I should admit or discharge them. It gets pretty complex, but I think the EHRs, I think we're trying to put in decision support. We're probably not doing it in the most effective way. For me to finish the sepsis bundle 2 days after I admit the patient, it's just not conducive to anyone at all. And so I really think that the physician-facing ones just need to be not made easy, but they need to make sense.
Yeah.
The patient-facing ones need to be safe. There are a lot of patient-facing companies where you type in a bunch of your symptoms asynchronously. It will use some AI algorithm to tell you what you likely have. But I'm an emergency doctor. I've diagnosed a 20-year-old with a heart attack. That will happen, right? And so if you're putting a chest pain for a 20-year-old, it may not necessarily spit that out because it's using artificial intelligence and it shouldn't spit that out. But we need to also make sure that we're not practicing population health when we're practicing doctor. We're actually practicing patient-centric health. So that's how I look at both of those.
I like the answer of being very pragmatic about your clinical practice. So that's really interesting. So I guess, looking forward into the future, and being pragmatic about it, what is the next kind of, like, what's 2023 look like in terms of telehealth? I know we have a lot of PHE kind of, regulations lifted from the federal level, maybe from a state level as well, and maybe organizational level right now. But that's, most likely a lot of this can be rolling back. Maybe, some states like Arizona and New Mexico, their state mandates have sort of been kept in place after, PHE. So just kind of curious, it's probably going to be state by state, kind of. But what are your thoughts in 2023?
I'm thinking that a couple items come to mind. One is because the technology itself is becoming really a continuum of information between the patient and the provider organization. Mm. The relationship really isn't really as much between a patient and a doctor as much as is it with an organization. And patients put their trust typically in a brand of their healthcare organization. Often it's a local brand, but now the span of influence of that brand will probably include the selection of technologies. And you were in a position where you had to select those technologies for your health system and build the ones that you didn't have. But because there's now chatbots that maybe would be the front door for a patient coming in with a symptom. And there's no billing for that, but it's an add-on service of sorts to attract the patient or to move them into a way where you can efficiently start to interact with them. So there's a different value propositions for different technologies along there, and they don't all drop to a payment structure cleanly. I think the influence of the different payment models will, you know, give direction and shape to how organizations select technologies. I think there's going to continue to be more consolidation across, you know, the slide we saw earlier about the platform idea is real, and that connecting your EHR or your legacy systems now to platforms that make sense across the patient's experience continuum, I think, is going to be key. And then the licensure issues, I can't see how we can avoid anything other than trying to get to a national medical licensure. As painful as that might be, I think
you heard it first here.
I think it's the right thing to do ultimately, but we need to build a structure that's appropriate for each of our credentialed and licensed professions.
Yeah, that's quite a bold statement there for the universal licensure. I'm very curious to dig into that later on. I'm sorry. Go
is
ahead.
Is there a question or is that a 5-minute warning?
Okay.
Oh, right behind you, we're getting a 5-minute warning. Okay.
All right. Double signal league. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
This is about trust. This is for Dr. Shaw. Okay. I've got a control company that is also a mobile clinic company. We're going to probably have 300 mobile clinics just for women's health in the United States.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Right.
And it may be 24, 48 hours before they get a call back. How much do you trust the telehealth physician? No, we're not even talking about telehealth prescriptions. We're talking about just normal prescriptions.
Or just healthcare in general. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a valid question. I don't have the answers to all of those points, but like I feel like it goes back to like, we can use any technology, whether it's telehealth or any other sort of modality, to kind of work together in collaboration. So, like as a pharmacist, former clinical pharmacist, or it absolutely is, and it's about collaboration, communication at the end of the day with the healthcare team. And so, like I've often in the past had great collaboration with physician colleagues as well as nursing colleagues to figure out like what is the best medication regimen for the patient. And you can't do it alone. It can't be in a silo. It has to be as part of like a patient-centered approach. And so I think telehealth allows you to do that. It maybe affects, and Erin, you could speak to this, but perhaps that allows you to kind of communicate more effectively and also remove some of those gaps in the transition of care that you often see in normal practice, in traditional practice, I suppose. Would you guys agree with that?
Or? Yeah, I think if you're running the new organization in the future, or that's right upon us, you're going to need to lay down, what the rules of operation are for your providers, and interacting with the pharmacist is going to be a high priority. And so when you yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, and when you build attract the people who are going to work with you, we need to have common understanding of the professional interactions that need to occur and make sure the workflow allows for that. If you have them booked out at every 10 minutes and they don't have time to return a call to the pharmacist, that's a problem too. So we have to make practical workflows.
Yeah. And I'll finish it with, I think 2024, 2025, we'll see an increase in quality of telehealth, because I think that's ultimately what we need. Systems in place where, you know, I'm not just a doc practicing out of somewhere. I'm really intertwined with the health system, and we need a system to make that happen.
Yep.
Thanks for everyone's attention. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks again.